Thank you, John, for that nice introduction. And thank you, audience, for being here. I want you to know what a genuine thrill this is for me to be here. When I saw the program of the notable forum speakers, and I'm looking at John F. Kennedy, Harry Truman, Fidel Castro, you know, George McGovern, Whoopi Goldberg, Malcolm X, Eugene McCarthy. I'm in high cotton, you know, that's good company, and I'm honored and I'm humbled to be asked to be here. And, you know, I want to share this with you first. If you had asked me a year ago, where would I be this night? You know, my answer would have been here. But the ironic thing about it, I'm not talking here, I'm talking there with you folks. Because after being in the frontline trenches of the Better Government movement and putting off all I wanted to do in my life for 10 years, I wanted to take a break. And I decided what I was going to do, which was enroll in Harvard Law School. I had tried it once before when I was 40. I had my undergraduate work at Birmingham Southern many years ago. But when I was 40 years old, I had always wanted to go to law school. So I enrolled in Stetson Law School at Fine College down in Florida. But at the time, I had four kids who were getting right close to college age. And I just have to tell you, it was more than I can do to support a family and go to full-time to law school. So that was the end of my law school career. But I've never forgotten that ambition. So a year or so ago, when I was stepping back and I thought I was going to take a breath from the front lines of the Better Government movement, I thought, I'm going to enroll at Harvard and I'm going to go to law school up there. So a year ago, if you had said that, I probably would have been in the audience here, out there, not up here. Now, I'm just delighted that John invited me to come and speak before you, because, as you know, something happened on the way to law school. I did not intend, the strange thing is, I did not seek this office. I did not run, I didn't expect, I told them, hey, you can find somebody better to be chairman of the Reform Party. I want to do some of the things that I've been putting off for so long. And they said, no, we really need you to run things. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, if there's broad support, and I really didn't expect it. In fact, some of my closest friends said, oh, Jack, it's just a bunch of dissidents trying to make trouble and injecting you into the, hey, I'm the trouble, you know, into the convention in Dearborn. I said, well, you don't have any worry then, because if that's all it is, I'm not going to get any support, and hey, it's over. And but as it turned out, when the elections were over, I won. I did 213 to 135, so I guess there were a lot of dissidents in that gang. Anyway, here I am. Now I'm involved. I don't even take office, incidentally, until January the 1st, and I've already got some of the people in my party trying to impeach me. So we're having fun, and I am here tonight to share with you my vision at what a spectacular one it is of where the Reform Party is going over the next couple of years. And I'm going to tell you this. I am tickled pink that I am given the opportunity and the blessing to be in the position I'm in, to lead the Reform Party to all these marvelous things that I see coming down the road. They won't come easy. We have a tough road ahead of us, but I'm going to share with you all these things that I see coming. Now, I don't pretend to be clairvoyant, but I have exactly the same gut feeling right now that I had 10 years ago when I, just as a mad, ticked off granddaddy, sat down at my, at my computer, and I typed up an ad. As John had already told you, you might remember, some, you're all too young to remember this, aren't you? Well, yeah, we got a few old geezers in here. But in 1990, I typed up this ad. I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. I dedicated, I had three grandchildren, and Evan, Eric, and Lindsay. I'm pleased to say I got eight now. But I just thought that this country was in deep trouble, that we had at that time a $3 trillion national debt that was putting an incredible burden on your generation, particularly, and all of us. And that something had to be done. And the problem, as I felt, was that we send good people to Washington, but we have a system there that eats them up and spits them out. It totally corrupts most people in a very short time. So my plan was throw every one of them out. And hey, if we lost a couple, and by my count back then, if I could get, if on one hand, remember there are 435 members of Congress and 100 senators, that's 535 people. In 1990, honest to God, I couldn't find five that I felt were honest people. And let me put a definition to that. A person with integrity and honesty in Congress is somebody who does not take money from special interest and vote on a bill that represents that special interest, or who does not dump debt on their children and grandchildren. So you can see where my five people was pretty accurate, because they were dumping debt, and they've continued to do that. So my gut feeling was so strong, and I'm not a rich man. Money has never meant anything to me as money. Yeah, I know, it buys good things, but I came from very humble beginnings. So even a little bit of money, I appreciate it. Don't get me wrong, money's nice, but it's not everything in this world. So I dipped into my retirement savings, and I took almost $50,000 out, and it paid for six of these ads. That's how strong I felt that the American public was ready to do something about the mess we had in Washington, D.C. Now, what happened? This is a newsletter that I sent out to my members at the conclusion of the 1990 elections, because I thought here was a situation that if we threw them all out, I've done my job, we don't need me anymore. If it's a total failure, I know when to quit, and I'm going anyway. So I didn't think it would run but one cycle. At the conclusion of the 1990 election, even though there were about 40 new congressmen that year, the majority of them were replacing congressmen that had died or retired or had gone to prison. Yes, in 1990, my friends, we had 20 U.S. congressmen retired drawing a pension who were convicted felons, and six more waiting to get old enough that they can start theirs. That was in 1990. We've got a few more, as you know, since then. That's what we have in Congress. And I was just so angry that I raided my future with that $50,000 to buy six ads that said throw them all out and put term limits on the new ones so they don't turn out as bad as what we have. But here's the results. While the actual number of incumbent congressmen voted out was a disappointment, 16. There were only 16 challengers who actually beat an incumbent. The rest of them were replacing retirements and thieves. It was nevertheless more than twice the number in the previous election. More important, I was advised by a group which tracks political races nationwide that our campaign was responsible for a remarkable narrowing of the spread in every congressional race in the nation that had any challenger at all. It was estimated that we made an incredible 12% difference in the voting spread. They said that to make a 2% difference in just one congressional district would be a remarkable achievement. To make a 12% difference in every district in the nation that had anybody at all running against an incumbent was nothing short of a miracle. So while the majority of politicians stonewall or downplay the result of the election and the efforts of Throw, let me tell you what appeared on November 27, 1990 in an article in the Boston Globe reporting on a forum sponsored by the Institute of Politics at Harvard University, that rings a bell, doesn't it, on the impact of the 1990 elections on 1992 elections. Quote, the analyst described the nationwide voting 3 weeks ago as a turning point in current U.S. political history. Here's another quote. I just think we saw the first round of the 92 cycle. I think the anger is going to get better build, said Ed Rollins, co-chairman of the National Republican Congressional Committee. Here's another quote. I think the real result was to change the political landscape of America, added Ronald Brown, chairman of the Democratic Committee. So even though in that year only 16 people were actually beat challengers, it made an incredible impact. And John did me too much of a service. He said one person can make a difference. In my ad itself, I say right here that one person can't make a difference, but you and I together can. And that's what did it. Hundreds of thousands of people sent me a buck, $2, $5. The average was $10. We didn't have any big supporters. And I, as fast as that money came in, I went out and buy another ad. The result was, at the end of the campaign, I thought was I was, you know, going to retire. The money kept coming in, the phone calls kept coming in, and everybody said, keep on going, Jack, keep on going. So I did, and I ran it through another election cycle. We set as our goal 100 new faces in Congress. I am happy to tell you, in the 1992 elections, there were 124 new faces in Congress, and almost all of them were challengers who beat incumbents. And the important thing is that the throw campaign set us up for the great things that could come from it. But the problem was that people became complacent. You know, we threw them out, great. We scared the heck out of the ones that remained in Congress. Oh, okay, now we'll go back to business. And what did they do to us? Same old thing. But the point I wanted to make was how I feel about how the Reform Party fits in. And the gut feeling I had back then that truly did make a difference on the political scene in America. About a year later, I had another gut feeling. I said, you know, it's not good enough that we throw the rascals out. We need somebody to lead who's not just another bought and paid for career politician. So I followed up. Ross Perot had called me to see if he could help just at the end of the last election cycle. And I'm one of the few peoples in America, I guess, that told him, well, I appreciate your help, offer for help, Mr. Perot, but I don't need your help. The money's already committed. The election campaign was just about over, but thank you, and I appreciate it. But I called him back. I said, hey, things are still popping. People want to continue this. So he agreed to come to Tampa and be keynote speaker for a convention that I was holding in Tampa, a symposium, to try to bring together all of the different, there were over 1,000 better government groups at that time, going in 1,000 directions, I might add. And so I was trying to bring us all together, that even though we had different outlooks, ideologies, and so on, we all wanted better government and desperately knew we needed it. So he agreed to do that, and in the process, I started the Draft Perot campaign. And I had such a strong gut feeling that he was the man to lead it, even though he was telling me he's a businessman, he's not a politician. On June the 1st of 1991 in Kansas City, I had a meeting of six states of better government people, reformers, not Reform Party, but people interested in better government, and I proposed then that we draft Ross Perot for President of the United States. Now, this is the important part. How strong was my gut feeling? And I have a videotape. I brought it with me, but we don't have the ability to show it here. On that videotape, I said, after I proposed that we draft him, I said, just so the history books get this right, it's 4:16 p.m., June the 1st, Kansas City, when the draft Perot phenomenon begins. Well, actually, it didn't really blow off until the Larry King show, but a lot had built up in the meantime. But that's how strong my feeling was that Perot would and could be the savior of this great nation. Now, you all know how that all worked out. He did great. Things didn't all go according to plan. Unfortunately, he dropped out during that year, and there's a lot of other things that happened. He did very well, though, but getting about 20% of the vote, which was fantastic for an independent. But the feeling of the people of this country, that they still weren't satisfied with where this country was going. And by the way, the Throw campaign, before it ran its course, I bought 633 of those full-page ads. The cheap ones were $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000. The expensive ones, like USA Today, $55,000 a page, one day. And thank you all. You were the people, or your dads and moms, sent me the money, and we were able to make that difference. And like I say, I'm not clairvoyant, but I have the same gut feeling right now that what you're going to see next year is that the Reform Party USA is going to make an incredible impact in the political power structure of this nation from next year on. It's not going to be easy, but timing is everything. It is timing. Just like in comedy, timing is everything, so is it in politics. I know that the spin doctors will tell you that, hey, we got a great economy, everything's roaring along, people are, hey, they're fat and happy, they got a paycheck next week, and everything's going to be politics as usual, and George Bush has these millions of bucks and all this stuff going down, and hey, what are you guys, Reform Party? Don't make us laugh. Well, I got news for them. They don't recognize what we are all about. There is, under the surface, in this nation, there is an absolute seething of emotions, of conflicts, that people are sick and tired, and they're smart enough to know that we have corrupt, rotten government in Washington, and a lot of other layers of government as well. But I'm targeting particularly now Washington. And I think one of the best things to illustrate this, look what's happening out in Seattle right now, WTO. Who would have thought, hey, we haven't had days like this since Vietnam. And I love it. I love it because it's the people are showing that they're now smart enough to know what's going on and what kind of a bill of goods that they're trying to, the powers to be are trying to handle us. And what the Reform Party, of course, is all about, we've been preaching it for years. We want fair trade. We don't want free trade. We want to get rid of GATT. We want to get rid of NAFTA. We want to get rid of all this fast-track crap that people are trying to foist on us that are taking the jobs of Americans away from us. And yes, people think, the press, the media always thinks, well, the American public is so dumb, they're not going to catch on to this. I got news for them. I'm out there speaking with the American public. And the Reform Party, incidentally, is a cross-section of middle America. We are not a bunch of freaks and wackos like some of them would like to have us made out to be. Sure, we have our colorful element, right? But hey, so do the Democrats and so do the Republicans and any other party. If you were to attend one of our conventions, you would see rock solid, feet on the ground, head screwed on right, good middle American citizens who want a better country for their kids and grandkids. That's what we're all about. I'd like to quote an old philosopher, as I recall, Arthur Schopenhauer. He once said, all truth passes through three stages. First is ridicule. Second is opposition. And third, it's accepted as self-evident. Okay, the Reform Party, you've seen the cartoons. We've been through the ridicule. In fact, we may be not quite out of some of that stage. But now we're getting the opposition. They don't want our candidate to speak in the debates, for example. We're getting opposition that some people do not want to give us the time or the print or the space on the TV, the airspace. We're starting to get opposition. Why? Because we are a threat. They know that this movement is on its way, and they're trying to slow it down, or they're trying to stop it, cut it off at the head. But it's not going to happen, folks, because right around the corner is going to be the truth that is self-evident, that we have corrupt government, we have dishonest government. You want to buy a president? Sure, just write the check. You want to buy a congressman? Write the check. And who do you think is paying for it? You are. Your children are. They talk about a national surplus. Right? Great. National surplus. I have the figures from the Department of Treasury. You can go up www.treasurydepartment.com or something. You can bring them up, and it'll tell you every day what the national debt is that day to the penny. Now, the fiscal year of this country changes on the 30th of September every year. Do you know that in fiscal year 1999, which ended September 30th, we had a national debt increase of $130 billion? Y'all are Harvard students, I ask you. Wait a minute now. If we got a surplus, how can we owe $130 billion more than we did last year? And it got it right down to the penny if you really want the whole thing. And as a matter of fact, so far this year, just since September 30th, we're over $3 billion more in debt. And they're talking surplus? They're lying to you, folks. And it's not right. It's immoral. It's dishonest. And the sad thing is, not everybody's a Harvard student. So some people buy that. They say, oh, government says it's got to be right, so they believe it. What the Reform Party is all about is honesty and integrity in government. That is our centerpiece. That is what we are all about. Yes, there are other factors. And yes, the press, they're on to us. Oh, Reform Party, they don't have a focus. They don't have an agenda. That, hey, my friends, they never even must have looked at our website. All you got to do is type www.reformparty.org, O-R-G, and you will see our platform. You will see our statement of principles, and you will like what you see. And you want to know the good part? The good part is we, honest to God, believe in it, and we are going to follow through, because we don't have any special interest money that we have to put aside. See, the Democrats and the Republicans, oh yeah, they've got principles and they've got a platform. But can they really follow through on it? No. Their hands are tied because they are in debt to the big money, the fat cats, and the special interests. Heck, they're even taking money from China. Can you believe it? So the purpose that we have, the opportunity that we have in the next 10 months is absolutely incredible. And I want to take my hat off and a salute to a guy by the name of Jesse Ventura. And yes, Jesse said a few things he wish he hadn't said, and I wish he hadn't said, because I've taken some heat for it. But let me tell you, he has done more recently to increase the acceptance of the Reform Party. He was here in Harvard. I saw the last, how many of you perhaps got to see him at his grade? Wasn't he terrific? You know the guy speaking from the heart. You know he's sincere. And that's what we're about. Sure, he says some wrong things, but my email was flooded. And most of the people didn't like what he said. And I might say, I'm surprised at how many people did like what he said. But most of them said, I don't agree at all with what he said, particularly about the religion part. But I admire his ability, because he wasn't speaking for the Reform Party. He was just speaking as a person. He was speaking from the heart. And he was also taken out of context, you know that. But what they admired about him, instead of what you would expect from a polished, savvy politician, which they're going to spoon feed all the things you're supposed to say to come out right. Well, I say a lot of dumb things. I don't know any better. I just blurt out the truth. And Jesse we're kind of cut out of the same cloth. He's 14 sizes larger though. But he has done a great service, not just to Minnesota, where he has incredibly high ratings. He had the highest approval rating of any governor in the history of Minnesota. Consider he only won on a 37% of the votes. And this was before he said some things. But even after he said some things, it's still 57%. How many governors in this country would love to have a 57% approval rating? But here's what Jesse did for us and for you. For once, for all, and forever, he has blown away the myth that your vote for a third party candidate is a wasted vote. On a fraction of the money that the other major parties, governor candidates were getting in Minnesota, on a fraction, Jesse said the right thing. He was, thank God he got into the debates. People liked what they saw. And thanks to the young people, they came out in droves and really made quite a difference. And Jesse blew away forever that crap that the Republicans and Democrats have been feeding us for years. They did it to John Anderson in 1980. They did it to Ross Perot in 1992 and 96. Gordon Black, the pollster, took up an exit poll on the day of the 1992 election, and he asked the right question. And it was a very broad poll, a very high number, where the percentage of error was only like 2%. He asked the question, if you thought Perot had a chance to win, how would you have just voted? An incredible 42% said they would have voted for Ross Perot in 1992. That would have been the winning margin. He would be in the White House in spite of the problems he made for himself by dropping out and some other things. But people had bought into that old saw from the parties that are in power, that your vote is wasted on a third-party candidate. Folks, it's not so. And I appeal, and this is going out on C-SPAN, I appeal to the nation. Vote your conscience. Vote your conscience. And if you think the Reform Party candidate is going to be a good candidate, that's the person you vote for. And we are going to have a good candidate for you, by the way. We have 8 people already signed on and declared their candidacy. And I'm not counting Donald Trump, who still hasn't officially declared. I do want to name them, because sadly, some of these people are not household names, but people ought to look them up and check out the Reform Party or their own websites. Some of these names, of course, you know, and I'm going to read them off because a couple of them are brand new, and I want to be sure I get all. As of the latest that I have, these are the Reform Party candidates for president, and they will be speaking, incidentally, tomorrow night. We are having, in Portland, Oregon, we are having a debate of all the 8. All 8 of them are going to be there to debate the issues. Robert Bowman, who I'll come back on that, but these are the candidates. Robert Bowman, Patrick Buchanan, Harvey Carroll, the Daniel Clay, Charles Collins, Dr. John Hagelin, Scott Kendall, and George D. Weber. Now, some of those say, never heard of them. Get to know them. It's a shame. I don't think these debates are going to be televised nationally. These people have incredible, impeccable resumes, and you would be proud to have any of them be president. Some of them, of course, have higher visibility, better organization, and a better chance. And I fully expect that we're going to have 1 or 2 more people, high visibility people, that will jump into this race before we're through. So we're going to not just have the timing right, we are going to have the right candidates, and we are going to be the right party. Because the people in this nation can can see through all the mess in Washington. And they're not going to buy it anymore that your vote is wasted on a third-party candidate. And by the way, I'm talking in times, good times. We're 10 months away from the election, folks, 11 months away. I don't wish bad on anything. I hope things keep on going good. But anything can happen in the next 11 months. Y2K could mess things up. The economy could turn south. Heck, some archduke could get shot in Sarajevo. Who would have thought some archduke getting shot in Sarajevo would have caused the death of 18 million people? But that's the way it is. So even in good times, I'm excited and I'm praying that nothing bad happens. But we are excited about our opportunities, and I'm excited to be in the position that I will help the party as best I can to move into the next millennium and be a major, major factor in American politics. And I have no doubt, and I want a videotape of this so that I can also have it to show with my, I don't even have a watch anymore, by the way. When I said it's 4:16, let's see, what do we got here? 7:42, when I told you that come after the elections of the year 2000, the Reform Party will be a major, major factor. Now, I want to save some time here because I know you've got some questions, and I'm sure there's some stuff that I didn't cover, and I hope I can answer it for you. So, John, is this be appropriate?
Thank you, Mr. Yargan.
All right. We do have about 15 or 20 minutes for questions, and the only thing we would ask is that you use the microphones and speak directly into the microphone, and we thank Mr. Yargan for being willing to field a few questions today.
Oh, happy to. Okay, let them begin. Yes, sir. If you would, please.
Well, your heart's definitely in the right place. But I don't understand that background, how when you say you're proud of the candidates that the Reform Party possibly will support, and Pat Buchanan, whose viewpoints are some of the most repulsive of all the candidates in this nation, how you can say that when he's, in most people's minds possibly, although I have no proof of it, an anti-Semite, a racist, and isolationist. How can you say that you'd be proud to support any one of those candidates when his name's one of them?
Very easy. Because I promise you, if Mother Teresa were on this list, I would have somebody come up. I've seen it. When about 2 years or so ago, just before she died, they ran an article in Time magazine about Mother Teresa. And two letters to the editor were put in there, putting down Mother Teresa. Now, and every name that's dropped out there, and believe me, just because a name is dropped does not mean that they are our candidate. They got to get on the ballot, including these eight guys. They got to get on the ballot in the 29 states plus District of Columbia, where we're not on, and that's going to eliminate, sadly, most of them. But to be specific about the gentleman's question, no matter who we have, there will be some people that do not like them. I just have to accept that. I've got to, George Bush is the front runner. But there are a lot of people in the Republican Party that will say exactly the same thing at putting Mr. Bush down. Mr. Gore is the champion of the Democrats. And believe me, he's catching all the flack. So that's politics, folks. That's life. There is no perfect person, no saint. But I can name anyone on here, and I know some of you could have a field day putting them down. But these people are all dedicated to promoting the Reform Party principles. And if they do that, I'll be proud of them. If you take www.reformparty.org and look at our principles and look at our platform, you'll like it. and we are going to hold their feet to the fire, whether it's Mr. Buchanan or whoever. This is what you ran on. You took the pledge that you're going to do this for the American people, and they dang sure better. Do we have any other questions?
I just would like to make a comment because I happen to be Jewish, and I happen to also be on the Buchanan campaign. And I was on the Buchanan campaign in 96. And when Pat was a Republican, he probably had more Jews and blacks working in his campaign than any other Republican. Maybe what you don't understand, when Jack talks about reform and integrity, you also have to understand that it needs to be integrity in the media. And you can't believe everything you hear when someone comes out and spouts out about Pat being anti-Semitic or Pat being racist. That's not the case at all. And I just, it drives me nuts to hear that, because there's a lot of conservative Orthodox Jews who are pro-life that support Pat Buchanan. He has a deputy co-chair who is a rabbi out of Ohio. If Pat was anti-Semitic, he would not have a rabbi on as a deputy chair of his campaign. For once, get that out of your mind. It's just baloney. I just had to respond. I can't stand to listen to that anymore.
Thank you. In fact, that follows what I'm saying about Mr. Schopenhauer said. The second part is opposition. You will have people that spin stories or whatever that will try to put them down, and just have to sort things out yourself and choose the candidate. Now you'll have a chance. You'll be able to vote for our candidate. It is open to any person who is a registered voter. You call into your state, write in and say, I want to vote in the Reform Party presidential nomination, then you'll get a ballot. So keep that in mind. Yes, ma'am.
Hi. You talked a lot about holding people's feet to the fire and making sure that they're going to act with the integrity that the Reform Party desires. And I think that's great. And I'm sure there's Democrats and Republicans in both parties who feel that way, too. How do you think you're going to be able to do it differently and the Reform Party is going to be able to do it differently if you succeed 10, 20, 50 years from now? When you're going to come up with the same problems of running a major political organization?
All right. Very good question. I hope. I'm not worried. And yes, I'm the first to say, who knows what was out there for even for our party 10, 15, 20 years down the road. But I know what's out there next year. And next year is what we got to worry about. Or there may not be 10 or 15, 20 years to worry about. So we'll take it a day at a time. The main thing we've got going for us, and Jesse proved, and the reason his approval rating is so high is because he's not beholden to any special interest. Do you know that every family in Minnesota has already gotten back a check averaging about $800, every family, because there was a big budget surplus in Minnesota that all the politicians were figuring every which way to Sunday to spend for their special projects and to take care of their special friends. And Jesse, because he was not beholden to any of these special ones, he was able to ram through and give that money back to the people who it really belonged to, the people of Minnesota. So, and I want to clear up another issue. Social issues come up. And as you have probably heard, we're not into social issues. Do we think they're important? You better believe we do. However, as Ross Perot said, the first thing you got to do is stop the bleeding. So what we're trying to do is fix the government problem of corruption and dishonesty, and then we'll worry about, because if we don't do that, the social issues will be moot. And we do think they're important. And anybody such as Mr. Buchanan or Mr. Bowman or Mr. Collins or any of our candidates who come forward with part of their agenda being a social issue, they do it either at their own hazard or at their own pleasure, because social issues cut both ways. And no matter what side you're on, there's going to be another 50% that are on the other side, you know. So, and we allow our candidates, whether they're running for governor or Congress or president, to choose. If they want to bring social issues into it, they do it at their own peril or help. And did I answer your question well enough, though?
Sort of, like, even if you bring it back to today, say you get someone elected, how are you going to make sure, other than their personal integrity, that they're going to stick to, you know, what you support?
Because they would lose the support of the Reform Party. They would also because we have put them up on this pedestal. They dang sure better. Public opinion is a powerful, powerful thing. And if somebody promises, as they have out in Washington State, that they came in on term limits, you know, the guy out there who unseated Mr. Foley because he said he pledged term limits and he was only going, his 6 years is up. And he's decided, well, maybe I have to, you know, I owe it to the public to stay there. Hey, let me tell you, there is public opinion all over to throw that guy out. That, and believe me, watch him do it. Watch him do it. And you folks in Washington, I hope you see this too. Throw that SOB out. And yes, do we have some bums in our group? Sure we do. Everybody does. Will we have a charlatan hidden in there? I think so. There's no perfect system, but we're going to become as close to it as anybody possibly can. And we're very new at the business, if you will, but there's something good about that. There's something very good about that, is we don't have this slickness and this politically correct modem. We just tell it like it is, and people appreciate that. They really do. Yes.
Hi, my name is Heather Thompson, and I'm president of a student organization here at the law school called Appleseed Center for Electoral Reform. We work on a variety of electoral reform issues, including campaign finance reform. But one of the particular issues that we're interested in is ballot access.
Yes.
And I noticed on your website and from talking to a few other people that in order to receive the presidential nomination for the Reform Party, the nominees have to get themselves on the ballot as an independent candidate in all the states where the Reform Party isn't on the ballot.
Yes.
That seems like a huge and very expensive obstacle to many of your candidates, and I was wondering how the Reform Party was going to address that.
Very easily, and it's a very good question, and I love your interest, because this is a bitter pill. Ballot access varies from state to state, and it's totally unfair in many states. I hope you saw what happened in Florida just the last time around. We passed Amendment 11. But the way to, first, let's take the good side. We are on the ballot in 21 states. So that means if somebody wants to run for president, they only got 29 left to go. If they were going to do it on their own, they'd have all 50 in the District of Columbia. We also have that pot of gold. Once they get on the ballot, we've got $12.6 million in matching funds waiting for them that they can spend, not Reform Party spends. They, the candidate, will spend. They have to stay within the rules of the FEC and use it on their elective process, but that's $12.5 million. And I also want to put down, there's been figures bandied about that it's too expensive to get on. First of all, if you have organization, you don't have to pay people to go out there. Volunteers do it. That's what got me on the ballot in Florida when I ran for Congress. If you're fortunate and have a good organization and your volunteers do it. Or even if you have to pay what I call a hired gun to go out and literally pay them to do the petitions for you, they may run anywhere from $1 to $4 a petition, just depending on how tough the situation is in that particular area. The toughest state that we don't have ballot access now is North Carolina, and it only takes 90,000. Now, that's a lot. Believe me, that is a formidable task. Incidentally, they don't just have to run as an independent. They could run Reform Party. These eight guys could take the 90,000, and then they say, well, let's run as a party. Let's put the party on. Hey, we only need like 56,000 running as a party. And they could divide the 56,000 among them. 9 into 56, what is it, Harvard? It's an even number. But anyway, they could do it the easy way and get on with the party. In many states, it takes fewer. Like in Texas, the second toughest state, it takes about 30,000 fewer petitions to get on as a party than it does to get on as an individual, as an independent. I would hope they get on as a party, because that also opens the gate that any other person running Reform Party for governor, for Congress, for mayor, for city council, the ballot's open for them. I don't know why we even set it up to allow them to get on, as even though some states it takes fewer to get on as an independent than it does a party. But overall, it's about equal. In fact, it may be easier getting one as a party than as a an independent. But if they get on and are our nominee, they get $12.6 million. And to knock off where some people are bandying about it's taking $5 or $6 million, I think that's to scare people off. It's not going to take that much. If you add up all of the states, that all the petitions you need, even running as an independent, it would be, I would guess, somewhere in the neighborhood of $300,000 to $400,000. And if it averaged even $3, and I don't think it would be that high. I only paid $1.50 per petition when I was running. But if he took $3 and it were $300,000, it were still less than $1 million. And if you're going to run for president, my friend, and you don't have $1 million, you better stay home. If you don't, you know, not of your own money, it helps, but if you don't have enough support, because especially if you are that good and beat out the others in the vote, now you get $12.5 million back. If you decided to run as an independent, you not only would have to do all 50 states yourself, you also wouldn't get any pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. You'd be out there fighting, and you better be able to raise $40 or $50 million like the big boys can. Okay? I admire you for your involvement in that area. It's critical. We desperately need ballot access in all states. And I hope you're in touch with Richard Winger. Are you? I'll talk to you. Richard Winger has an article called Ballot Access News. He's devoted his life. He's devoted his life to see inform people. Great guy. Great guy. Okay. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I had a question as to how are you gonna like control your candidates once you get them into Congress, not to the fall into like the interest groups and big money fat cat type stuff, and because like it seems like you're. I agree totally, I mean, with a lot of the stuff Jesse Ventura says and some of your other candidates, but I just wonder, like, since you're so diversified, how are you going to control them once you say in the next couple of years you actually get your candidates into Congress and they get in the mix of things?
Well, yes, I'm happy to tell you that most, and I know, as I said before, there could be some charlatans in there that are coming in under the guise of reform, but most of our people truly, in their hearts, are in this because they want a better country for their kids and grandkids. They're not on an ego trip. They're not on a power run. They're in it for their kids and grandkids. There are some exceptions. But again, public pressure and the party pressure to keep them on the straight and narrow. And there's no question, some of them are going to go astray regardless. They do, just like the guy in Washington who, after promising everybody 6 years, now he wants to run again. There are people that have no integrity out there. They show their face, and I trust that he will be voted out as well as anybody else who fails to live up to their promises. So there is no perfect plan. I wish there were, but I tell you this, your chances are a hell of a lot better with a Reform Party member than they are with a Democrat or Republican. A lot. All right, do we have any others? I want to mention something else about public opinion, if I may. When I was running the throw ads, there were about 20 newspapers across the country that refused to run them, including the Boston Globe. I got on somebody's radio show up here, and I said, I want everybody who hears my voice, as soon as this show is up, call the Boston Globe and say, why won't you run Jack Gargan's ad? You know, the next day, the Boston Globe called me and said, Mr. Gargan, we'll run your ad. And I did that in Seattle. And I did that in Spokane, Washington, which was Mr. Foley's hometown. I got on a talk show up there. And I had them call it, and they changed it. I at least had about 8 of those 20. Now, a few of them, including the Tallahassee Democrat and the Little Rock. Little Rock had 2 papers, and I couldn't get it. They did the Democrat. I think one was the Democrat and the Gazette. Back then, I think they've emerged. I couldn't get either one of them, either in 1990 or 92, to do it. But public pressure is great. Use it. Use it, just like your vote. One other thing. Boy, I better not forget this. We are reaching out to people all over this country. You want to send a message? Call your supervisor of election. Go down to the courthouse or have them send you a
change of voter registration. And if you're not registered, for God's sakes, get registered. And register Reform Party. What an incredible message. And then vote. If you want reform, vote reform. And we are especially reaching out to young people. You are the ones that are going to pay the highest price for the sins of your fathers and grandfathers. And yourself, because you've been sitting on the sidelines for the last 20 years, figuring let Jesse do it or let somebody else do it. You've got to get involved. You've got to vote. And if you think your vote is important, I got news for you. It is so critical. It means so much. Yes, your one vote. Now, I had somebody with a question over here. Yes, sir.
Unfortunately, political ideas are not patentable. Yet ideas like term limits, balanced budget amendments, and also preventing people who are in a government from going out and lobbying against the government. These ideas came from the Reform Party, and
true.
It's unfortunate the other two parties are continually co-opting.
True.
We don't get the recognition. How can we improve that?
We stay the course. It's not going to be easy. By the way, term limits. You know, they all talk term limits. They talk the talk, but they don't walk the walk. They get within one vote, and then they always have some reason. We just couldn't get it through this time. We're on to them. You keep the pressure on your congressman. You want term limits. It's the only way we're going to clean house up there.
Just recently, George Bush has slipped in the polls behind John McCain in New Hampshire.
Uh-huh.
And there's been a lot of talk that this upcoming election is going to be totally different, mostly because of the internet and other types of communication.
Yes.
Could you elaborate on your ideas?
Love to, and thanks for bringing this up. Because if you'll notice, at first Mr. Bush had an incredibly big lead. Nobody was even close. And there's been this dissatisfaction, this concern, even among Republicans. Where did all this money come from? What is owed? We got the same thing happening on the Democratic side. And that's one of the things we're tapping into, the discontent. We think that all those people who don't want to vote for Mr. Bush, we're not stealing votes from him. And that's another thing that bothers me. The Reform Party doesn't steal votes from anybody. We earn every one we get. And we're not putting anybody. You don't vote for this person to keep that one from going in. Vote your conscience, and then, well, you'll get the real good person in. But watch what happens. It isn't the Reform Party's going to hurt the Republican Party. You watch what happens with labor and the honest working man out there who knows what's happening to his jobs, who knows what's happening to GATT, NAFTA, and they know we've been in the front lines of this for years. You watch the effect. We're going to pick up all those people on the Democratic side who are not going to vote for the front runner, because Mr. Gore doesn't have 100% all for him. We're going to get a lot of those, and a lot of them are going to be from Labor America. A lot. And that will be balanced by those who are not happy with Mr. Bush's stance on things or what he's all about. We're going to get a lot of those Republican votes. And here's the best thing of all. Do you know that about over 55% of the people in this nation, by recent polls, said that they really don't consider themselves Democrat or Republican? And we're sure going to get a bunch of those votes. A bunch. Am I answering your question well enough?
One other question. Do you think the Reform Party could take an active interest in trying to convert over some people that may have tried to run on some of the other sides, like maybe John Kasich, Elizabeth Dole, Jesse Jackson, similar types of people?
I'm not allowed to actively, personally, anybody that's in national level of Reform Party cannot call people up and try to entice them or anything. Of course, somebody else can do it. You know, if you want one of those people to run, hey, call them up and say, why don't you consider? Because, and incidentally, I'm not totally in favor of this. I think that the Reform Party ought to have better control over who our candidates are and how we select them. This is, in my judgment, is a very noble experiment in democracy, but it leaves us open to some tomfoolery and some mischief by individuals or organizations who want to play hanky-panky with our system. But we would invite anybody who will subscribe and truly mean what they say about subscribing to the to the principles of the Reform Party and our platform is welcome to be our candidate, but they have to take the initiative. We don't call them up and say, we want you. And there's a bunch of them I'd like to be calling. And technically I can, because I don't take office until the first of the year. I'm not a party officer at the moment. So technically I do it, but in the spirit of the law, as well, the rule, it's not a law, as well as the letter of it, I have to say I backed off, because I had already called a couple of them before I realized I'm not supposed to be doing that. So I can't even mention their names now, can I? But anyway, we would love, you know, it's still open. And I do believe that before the process is closed and too late to anybody jump in, I think we're going to have one or two other, perhaps well-known people that are going to say, wait a minute, this is our chance. Thank you.
Jack, the sense of anticipation that you feel, I felt very strongly this last week watching the WTO protests out in Seattle. I think this was one of the first times in my recent memory that I can recall Americans going into the street,
yes,
and protesting against American corporate power.
It.
And given that the other four major candidates of the two major political parties have all clearly stated that they're in favor of absolute free trade, don't you think this is a huge opportunity to the Reform Party to differentiate yourself?
Incredible. Incredible. And that's why I feel we will draw so strongly from working America. Even if the union leadership may throw their lot, I think the rank and file is going to be reformed, because they know we mean it. We're going to keep their job here. And I think they're tired of their union leaders and other people in power who are writing the checks and then betraying them by letting these jobs go overseas or putting themselves in bad bargaining position, or even if they're not union members. We are losing tons. Look at the trade imbalance. If you are politically astute at all, it ought to scare the bejeebers out of you. And it doesn't happen overnight. It's been building up. You can't do it forever, folks. And the path that we're on is going to permit exactly that. All of a sudden, we wake up someday and we're a bunch of people flipping hamburgers.
Jack, I have a question about the media. The same fat cats who feeds both major political party feeds the media through their advertisement. And in the past, a Reform Party candidate got shut out from debate and put,
yes,
in the air and whatnot. But thank God we have a new vehicle called internet. And I wonder, Reform Party, under your leadership, how do you plan to capitalize internet as a media to convey our message to all the deserving people?
Although I have to admit I'm from the wrong generation, I'm computer illiterate, my grandchildren run rings around me, I know how to answer my email for the most part and so on, but what's important, I recognize the power of the internet and how it can reach so many people so well, so quickly, and I surround myself with people who are smarter than me. That's how I've always done it. If I have any success at all, it's because I was smart enough to get people who are smarter than me and surround myself with them and then take these areas where we, that are going to make an incredible difference. And certainly the internet is a major one. That's why I keep saying www.reformparty.org, and Reform Party is all lowercase and all one word. Yes, do we have any others? Because I know we have to make this a wrap because of the time. I'm going to stay here as long as y'all have questions. My job is to get the message of the Reform Party out and to invite everybody, join us. We can make a difference together. And I invite particularly the young people. You want a party? Here we are. We're for you. And you can make a difference. Thank you so much.